Hello everyone, hello football fans around the world. As you can tell from my voice, I am not Nick English. He is unfortunately unwell this week, so I'm Greg Johnson, taking over the Monday pod from my usual slot on Thursday. And I am joined today by Mohamed Butt. How are you doing, Mo?
Pretty great, yeah, not too bad. Yeah.
You haven't been struck down by the lurgy like Nick?
Thankfully, no. I had a nice cookie as well, so I'm feeling very good.
Very nice. You have the energy to see yourself through this podcast. James McManus is here. It's been a while since you've been on the pod, hasn't it, James?
It has. You've not invited me back, Greg, but I finally got the call. Thanks for having me.
Like the bat signal going off in the sky.
Yeah, finally, off the bench.
Off the bench. Also off the bench is Natasha Henry. How are you doing, Natasha?
I'm all right. I have had the lurgy. I don't normally sound this deep, but I quite like it.
So you're kind of on the tail end of the lurgy. Nick is in the
thick
of it right
now. We're going
Radio
4, aren't we?
We are.
A little bit.
A little bit
if you've just joined.
So, straight off the top, the Champions League draw happened today. It is Monday. Arsenal got Bayern Munich and it's a German word, Schadenfreude. I think everyone would agree there's a little bit of that going on with the Arsenal fans. It's happened again. Groundhog Day. Do the Gunners have a better chance this year, though, Mo?
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, obviously, you could look at Bayern Munich. They're not
right on the fence, then. All of the
splinters.
Answers I could possibly give.
I'd have to say no, they don't. I think, but you could argue on paper, yeah, they do. The Bayern aren't the strongest year, but I think Ancelotti's style actually will be a lot harder for them to overcome than Guardiola's, because Guardiola always seemed to give them a chance somehow, even though his sides were always better.
I mean, Arsenal like to play football, and Pep will let you play football, whereas Ancelotti's going to hit on the counter.
Exactly. That's it. I mean, Ancelotti would be like, okay, you know what they're going to play? Just sit back and hit him on the break. But then Arsene Wenger's now doing that as well, so who knows?
An interesting battle tactically, perhaps. But James, you're obviously a man with your eye on social. Do you think the Bayern fans hate this draw as much as the Arsenal fans do?
They're secretly worried about it. They're not having the best season, are they? Thomas Müller scored at the weekend. It's his first Bundesliga goal this season, and it's we're coming up to Christmas. So, and he's a key attacking figure for them. I mean, Arjen Robben, will he be fit? If he's fit, he's fantastic, but he's made of like crackers now these days, so he's very brittle. And they've got like Koeman's had injury problems. Lewandowski's still scoring, but there's a lot of key components in that team that aren't. Are they going to be fit? So, ironically, it's Arsenal that will go in as a fitter team into a big game for once.
Well, there are a few months to go, so the even more biscuits could be broken by then. Yep. We'll have to see. But Ancelotti beat Wenger 3 times out of 4 when he was Chelsea manager, Natasha. But Wenger actually beat and drew against Ancelotti's Milan in the last time they met in the Champions League when they it was in the round of 16 again in 2008. Who do you think holds the advantage as the managers?
I don't think there is any advantage. I think both teams, depending on what happens over Christmas in January, you know, both teams could have lost 3-4 players, or they could be flying at the top of their leagues and, you know, the odds could rapidly change. But I don't think it's going to be, oh, I beat you, what, 6-8 years ago? You know, completely different teams, completely different personnel and both managers are older as well, hopefully a bit wiser Wenger's case.
I think this is the best equipped Arsenal have been for any challenge like this. In as long as I can remember, probably 7-8 years. Probably.
Since they made the final, I think,
this is the most Champions League capable team that Arsenal have had probably since Paris.
They look a bit more professional and like you don't worry about Arsenal as much going into games they should walk as much.
They've got options as well, which seems weird for an Arsenal side.
It's because they can hit on the break. That's the key thing. The ability to play on the counter-attack is what got them to the final in 2006, and it's what, if they get that far again, it'll be because they can play on the break with Alexis Sanchez.
And Oxlade-Chamberlain, perhaps. He's been having quite a good season so far.
Theo Walcott, so everyone's sort of benefited from this new system of playing on the break.
Except for Olivier Giroud.
Well, he's benefiting in his own way.
But that said, he does seem to come into his own when he is being written off. So him sitting on the bench could be the best thing for him this season. He comes on, he scores a goal or he makes a goal and, you know, he goes home happy.
Interesting. And one thing, Bayern Munich have created the most chances in the Champions League so far this season. So Arsenal may have to weather the storm to some extent. But coming to another side that are topping the table for stats across Europe this season, Monaco are currently the highest scoring side in Europe's top 5 leagues, where I think it's 53 goals in Ligue 1 so far.
3.7 goals a game they're averaging.
Very impressive. And although some City fans may be happy with their draw against Monaco, because that's who they've got in the round of 16 Champions League, do you think perhaps that, you know, this could actually be a side that could really hurt Pep? We've seen how his sides at Barcelona, Bayern and now City can be exposed to pace. Monaco are a quick side, Natasha.
I think any side could hurt Manchester City right now. If they go into that game with confidence that, yeah, this is Man City and, yeah, this is Pep, but Man City are a team, you know, they're a team on their way up. if you look at Jurgen Klopp, he had loads of time. He had half a season at Liverpool to get his ideas across, to get people working as he wants. Pep hasn't had that time. So I think whoever they faced would have been kind of rubbing their hands. And, you know, they've got to be rubbing their hands because Manchester isn't the best holiday.
It's not exactly news to anyone, but last six shots on target faced by Claudio Bravo has resulted in 5 goals and 1 save. That's not a great record, is it, James?
I mean, he's been a flop, hasn't he, Claudio Bravo, by any estimation? I mean, he was excellent at Barcelona, but a lot of Barcelona fans will always probably know deep down that Ter Stegen was a better goalkeeper, and he is a better goalkeeper. But Bravo has brought in to fit a style of play, and so is John Stones to an extent, but without the necessary players around you to... So if you're a goalkeeper and you're really good on the ball and you give it to a fullback and they're not very good on the ball, then it renders the goalkeeper good on the ball somewhat pointless.
Just comes back to you, doesn't it?
Well, he's just going to give it back to you in an awkward position and it makes you look bad, which is probably the thing that John Stones and Claudio Bravo, they're two parts of a back five and they're the only two that can do it. So they are leaking goals and inviting pressure on them. Mm. And Pep's system is not built to invite pressure at all.
I think people keep forgetting that John Stones is young. It's not like he's played 300-400 games. He's basically teaching himself to drive in that Man City team. No, because when he moved there, he's thinking, I'm going to be playing alongside Vincent Kompany. He's going to, you know, I'm going to learn from him. He's going to guide me.
So does Pep need to be tapping the dashboard for an emergency stop more? Or
well, he should have paid for his parking in the summer. Let's be honest.
Yeah, this is a wonderful range of.
I reckon we've got about half hour in this analogy.
I mean, this is it. Guardiola had in the summer, he had massive needs at fullback and to a lesser extent centre back, although you could argue Nico Otamendi isn't a massive problem per se, but you could definitely get a better centre back than Otamendi, and definitely massive upgrades needed at fullback, and they just didn't address those needs. Now, part of that was maybe Guardiola wanting to curb his spending for later seasons. Was it because he still
spent a long
time? Was it because he thought, oh, I can improve these players, I'm such a good coach? Or maybe he didn't want to do too many changes at once. I don't know, but really, I mean, if you're looking at the Man City squad, that was the one you need to change first, the fullbacks. It's so bad.
Well, I mean, if just looking purely at the numbers, kind of sums it up, their systematic weakness. Man City have now just kept one clean sheet in their last 17 games across all competitions. And just going back to the point on Monaco, because I've talked a lot about City there, but Monaco, a very exciting side. Who are the kind of young players? Because you hear a lot about Monaco's kind of starting 11 at the moment. Who are the players you think could really hurt City, James?
Thomas Lemar, who plays out on the left, kind of took over the role that when Martial moved to Man United. Thomas Lemar came in there.
There's some headlines that Man United signed the wrong wide forward, wasn't
yeah,
there?
Yeah, there's a lot of that. There's Kylian Mbappe. He's 19, scores a lot of goals. And they've got Radamel Falcao, but not the Premier League version. They've got like
in
the old good
face,
one.
In your face, Van Gaal.
They've got the old good one. And he's not a young face, but Fabinho's 24, I think. Mm. And he's a top three
He's
club.
The kind of fullback that Pep could probably do with.
He's if Man United have 30 million in January, they need to go sign him and stick him at right back, because he can play holding man as well. he's versatile. He can play left back if you want him to. Dribble to Divay, left back, very good. They're just a very young, exciting team. I think I think they'll knock City out, personally.
Benjamin Mendy as well. Shout out to Benjamin
When you
Mendy.
Have a team with no fear, you know, we see it with young players all the time. They just go in and they've got no baggage, whereas City are under pressure, especially because the Champions League is this elusive trophy for them, you know, and Pep's got experience of winning it, so therefore he should take them to the final. So they're going to come out of that and they're going to have the weight of the world on their shoulders.
Speaking of exciting times, speaking of exciting teams, we're going to move on quickly to Leicester City versus Sevilla, another interesting tie of the round of 16.
Exciting?
Well, I think it is, isn't it, Mo? You're going to tell us why it's exciting.
Oh, it's going to be absolutely fantastic. This is a total clash of styles. You've got Sevilla, who is high pressing, high intensity, short passing, players moving positions, three at the back often, you know, just up the field, constantly in the opponent's half, madcap pressing. It's going to be amazing. Leicester City, completely the opposite. Deep line to block defence, fast counterattacks, 1-2 passes up the field, direct balls to Jamie Vardy. And, you know, it's weird to say this because Sevilla are, on paper, such a great side, and under Sampaoli are amazing, and Sampaoli's a genius coach, but I think Leicester could really win this.
You look at City at the weekend, it was fairly similar.
Yeah, stylistically, they match up. They match up so well. You know, it's reliant on Vardy and Mahrez and the defence having great games, but that's entirely plausible. It's entirely possible. They are fantastic at doing what they want to do. It they'll let Leicester be Leicester of last year, and it sounds weird to say, but Leicester could be in the quarterfinals of the Champions League.
Speaking of Arsenal's draw with Bayern Munich, it seems to be Groundhog Day, as you said earlier. Paris Saint-Germain have drawn Barcelona again. But I mean, there's pressure under Unai Emery. It's not quite working out as people would have hoped, has it, James?
I mean, they've been in a sticky run since the start of the season. There's rumours that Matuidi wanted to leave. He's like a main component in their midfield. Thiago Motta's not been reaching the standards. Motta's been temperamental. Verratti, he's been pretty temperamental. There's a lot of moving parts in that team which aren't quite gelling together. They've hired Emery as a European specialist, though, haven't they? These are exactly the sorts of games Emery was hired as PSG boss to negotiate. They're going to win the league no matter what, PSG.
Do you think so?
Yeah, they'll quite it all tell March, April time. They'll come through. They've got the best striker in the league in Cavani. So the quality will tell, but his future essentially hangs on these two Barcelona games.
Well, there are rumours that Roberto Mancini is being linked with the job in case it all goes wrong for Emery. But as James said, he's a specialist in the Cups. Emery did very well at Sevilla, winning them Europa League last season. He's going to have experience of facing Barcelona. Can he actually do one over?
He doesn't have a good record against Barcelona, but I don't think he's won it. He's won one game, I think. He's got a really bad record. But the thing is, this is Sevilla need to show, PSG need to show patience with Unai Emery, because his teams always start off poorly. All his Sevilla teams, the one in the Europa League three times in a row, they all started the season very poorly, picked it up second half of the season.
The David Moyes of European football.
You've taken the words right out of my mouth.
He may not win this tie because it's Barcelona. They are a better team than PSG, and Unai Emery doesn't have a good record against PSG, but they should stick with him, because if he had been given any other tie, you know, he could have done really well. I don't know if he'll win, even if he'll win them league, but it's part of a process. For years, PSG were a Zlatan club. He has to move them on to a post-Zlatan era. That takes more than a year of rebuilding. But for Barcelona, this is probably a good draw, because it's a talented side. They can flex their muscles a bit, actually give them a test, but they're probably a beatable side. MSN being full flow, you know how it is.
I was going to say, MSN, with that kind of firepower up front, Natasha, that's an attack that can hurt anybody, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I think Barcelona are still kind of living in Pep's shadow. I mean, even if they won the league last year, but obviously, what are they, 7-8 points behind Real Madrid?
6 points behind.
Okay, 6. Thank you.
They're like most children, these points, each one of them.
6.
But you're right, all the criticism of Enrique ultimately boils down to the fact that he's not Guardiola.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of in a no-win situation. You know, it was like whoever replaced Sir Alex was going to get grief if he wasn't as good as Sir Alex, which no one is going to be. And even with Mourinho, who should have got the job at the time, is still proving he's not as good as Sir Alex. So you kind of have that shadow still over the club, but Pep's moved on. They haven't. Maybe they need to take out a league.
They kind of have. I mean, they won the
but
treble.
Have the fan, I think the question is, have the fans moved?
Quite an unloved figure, isn't he, Luis Enrique?
A lot of fans have, because he obviously, I mean, Luis Enrique won the treble and then won the double the next year, which no one's done since 1954.
Why is there so much criticism of him, though?
Because he picks very strange 11s sometimes. He over-rotates, which is something Pep really didn't do. Pep would rotate, but never over-rotate.
So you're comparing him to Pep? And then
this is what fans do. And they shouldn't do it, because he's his own guy. Because what he does that no other coach, including Pep Guardiola, I've never seen a coach do this. He's improved literally every single player at the club. And bear in mind, this is Messi, Neymar, Luis Suarez, Piqué. He improved every single player. He's a real coach. He makes his players better, makes them fitter, makes them more technically focused on what they have to do. Tactically, he's not a genius, but you don't have to be a tactical genius to be a great coach.
As I've shown at Real Madrid this season, I mean, he's now broken the club's record for unbeaten games, and they're going to be facing Napoli in the round of 16 in the Champions League. Quite a historic tie. Some people say that, was it 1982 when they faced each other last time in the European Cup? That was like one of the games that convinced the Italians to go in for Diego Maradona. Might have got my dates wrong there. I'm getting some funny looks at me.
1989. It's like...
Here we go.
It was the Quintela Butre. They beat...
yes, that's the one.
Napoli's Maradona's Napoli.
That's why I'm not Wikipedia. But we'll move on from that little typo of the mind there. Sounds like the kind of tie that Real Madrid want to stamp all their authority over. But have Napoli got any tools that could hurt them?
I think so. I think Napoli are pretty organised. So they've got Koulibaly at the back, really good. They've got Jose Callejon up front, who's really kind of a lethal wing forward. And interestingly enough, I think Real Madrid have got a history of getting done over by their ex-players. And I think look, Madrid, objectively, you could argue, aren't a truly great side, but they have this unbeatable will to win. Even when they're playing poorly, when they're playing well, it doesn't matter, they can win. Again, at the weekend, when they drew level against Deportivo, you knew what was going to happen. You just sensed it in your bones, and then, obviously, Sergio Ramos, 97, I mean, missed their injury time. Imagine if you played for Alex. Imagine if Ramos played for Sir Alex Ferguson.
There's a lot of Fergie talk in this pod. It's quite. He's not even a manager anymore. He's not even in the Champions League this season.
The stands watching over everything.
Absolutely. Speaking of one that people might want to watch, the hipster showdown, as some people might want to put it, is Leverkusen versus Atletico in the round of 16, which again is a hyper pressing team against a team that like to sit back. So it'll be an interesting clash of styles between Diego Simeone's side and Roger Schmidt, who he's having a bit of a strange time at Leverkusen. One month he's flavour of the month. next month he's on his way out. But we'll have to see what happens there in Europe for him, because they're not having the best of seasons in the league. Porto Juventus are another tie in the round of 16, which is Casillas take on Buffon in the battle of the two of the greatest keepers of their era and generation.
Of any era, I would argue.
Well, we can go there. And Benfica also take on Dortmund in a tie that should be full of goals, really. Dortmund broke the record for goals scored in the group stages of the Champions League this season. And although they may also be having a few problems in the league at the moment, a bit like Barcelona, they've got players that can really hurt anyone, haven't they, James?
They have. They've got Ousmane Dembele. He's got more assists and goals combined than any other under-21 player in Europe's top five leagues in 2016. He's a freak, Ousmane Dembele. He plays out wide. Another freak. They've got Aubameyang, who's the quickest centre forward in the world. And they've got Marco Reus, who...
Yeah,
I mean, he's finally come back.
Hat-trick assists all the time.
Yeah, I mean, he got a hat-trick in the Champions League, and he got two assists and a goal in his first Bundesliga game. Mm. And he's, I mean, they're a final four team for me, Dortmund, so they get the right draw.
Just need to get their defence sorted a little bit more. But now moving on to the Europa League draw, which sees Manchester United take on San Etienne. I mean, that's the kind of draw that they would have been hoping for, isn't it, Mo?
Pogba battle.
Yeah. Florentin versus Paul.
It's going to be great. It's going to be 1-1 away from home, or 2-1 to St Etienne, 4-0 at home at Old Trafford, and that's Bob's your uncle. That's how Man United are rolling in Europe.
Precise predictions.
Bookmark
them.
4-0. Just average away from home, brilliant at home. Although, interestingly enough, like, the away leg is going to be played on a Wednesday because of Lyon, and Lyon being close to St Etienne. He's also playing have a home game on the Thursday, so they've drawn the lot. They're going to be at home. So United are back on Wednesday, people. You know.
Well, that sounds ideal, doesn't it, Natasha? Because, I mean, it's only in France, so it's not even that far to travel. You can have the Wednesday game. But how serious should United take this competition if they're going to start getting these kind of gimmies like that?
Well, I thought Saint Etienne was a pop group from the 90s. So I'm really not sure. No, I'm joking.
Get a club that can do both.
Hey, sing songs and play football. No, I reckon there could have been harder draws, but it's still the last 32. You know, with Mkhitaryan out, is he going to play Zlatan in every game?
I think Mkhitaryan will be back. Will hopefully be back by then, because this is next year, isn't
it? You never know, Jose. He's masterminding this whole situation, isn't he? So when he wasn't using him, it was Mkhitaryan's fault. And now Mkhitaryan's playing, it's Jose Mourinho's credit, is it?
He's a genius, Macca.
He's a genius for start playing that world-class player, isn't he? What a genius.
I must admit, having watched him a lot at Dortmund, I don't really see anything that he's doing at United. I mean, he's been involved in 4 goals in his last 4 games in all competitions by United. I don't see anything he's doing now for United that he wasn't already doing at Dortmund.
You sign a £30 million player and don't play him for 3 months, then you start playing your £30 million player and he's actually plays like a £30 million player. That doesn't mean the manager gets credit for playing the £30 million player.
I think Mourinho's argument was that he wasn't ready for the Premier League. We saw him
What a load of nonsense. It's just a power play, isn't it?
If we're going back to cars, that's like saying you're not ready for the motorway. You've got to drive on the motorway to know you're not ready for it.
Let's not go back to cars. We can get lost in this all day long.
On the ring road.
The other English interest in the Europa League, so obviously Southampton are out of it. West Ham missed the boat long ago. Spurs, and they're going to be playing Ghent. Not Genk, Ghent. There's two Belgian teams. That's made me lose a pub quiz before, so do make sure you get that right. There's not a huge number of quotation marks big teams in the Europa League this year. I mean, Spurs have got to be one of the front runners to win it, haven't they, Mo?
I mean, especially since Villarreal and Real Madrid drew each other. That's basically two of the best non-English sides in the competition. Two of the best sides in the competition, and they've drawn each other now, so one of them will be eliminated. I wouldn't say it's an open field for Spurs, but there is. If they dedicate their focus to it, it is a relatively straightforward path. They could get quite far in the competition. And then it's their best bet to get back in the Champions League. The top four is not going to happen. And I would say for Man United, the same thing. Europa League, winning the Europa League, as Unai Emery has shown at Sevilla, you dedicate your focus to it, you win a cup competition, which is awesome, and you get back in the Champions League. Both United and Spurs should really focus on this.
You're shaking your head, James.
I don't think Pochettino rates the Europa League. He doesn't really care about it. He's shown that the last 2 years.
Played Tom Carroll last year, didn't he?
Yeah, Harry Winks is the new Tom Carroll. Who's the next Harry Winks? That's the only thing he's going to use the Europa League for, to be honest.
I think he should take it serious. Like, if we look at England, and everyone always says they've never won a trophy, they don't have a winning mentality, they don't know how to work their way through a tournament. Spurs are kind of that team. They've never, other than the League Cup, they never really win anything, so it could be a good opportunity for him to get them in the kind of focus. No disrespect, I don't think they'll win the league. I do think there's a couple of better teams, but you know, why not go for it? You've got a big enough squad, and apparently they're really fit.
I think Man United will go for it, because I think Jose is all about That's how he judges himself.
But he did say he's not interested in the Europa League.
Yeah, but he
that
says
was until
that,
top four disappeared. Though,
yeah, the top four is looking like a horse he can't really get on top of now, isn't it? So
interesting.
That's just some idiot, isn't it?
other notable ties in the Europa League. We've already discussed Villarreal versus Roma, but also Borussia Mönchengladbach will be taking on Fiorentina. Lots of interesting players
now
on
that
both sides.
Is a hipster tie.
It is indeed for both the shirts, the players, everything involved, even the managers as well.
If De Hood is still there, oh look out!
Ooh. We're going to do a quick review of the weekend's action. Manchester United, as we've just talked about, there took on their Europa League title rivals, Tottenham Hotspur at Old Trafford, and came away with a 1-0 win. How important was that win for Jose Mourinho, Mo?
Massive. As big as Zlatan Ibrahimovic's ego. It was just the most important thing to actually win, to face a top six side, to beat them, and of course, even more importantly, relevant to this season, to take a one-goal lead and hold the one-goal lead. They've been leaking goals like the Titanic. You know, they can't keep anyone out, but they actually do it this time. I mean, and partly it's because they just forgot. He forgot trying to play out the back. I mean, Phil Jones had a 33% pass completion rate. Marcos Rojo had 46%. They were just hoofing the
Jones
ball down
and
field.
Rojo together made 9 passes.
They were just hoofing the ball down the field.
They completed three of them.
And that is the best way to bypass the press, I suppose, when you think about it, is just kick the ball over it. Of course, you'd expect Zlatan to maybe win more of those long balls, but I suppose if you're just hoofing it up there.
That's kind of the thing, is it? Spurs excel at winning the ball from their opponents in their own half. If you're just not going to play with the ball in your half, that kind of negates Spurs' strength, doesn't it, Tasha?
Yeah, I mean, Man U had to win, and you kind of never felt like Spurs were going to. They just don't have that confidence when they go to Old Trafford, or, you know, you see them against players like Man City and they look like they believe they can win. But they go to Man United and they go back into their shell. Mm. And obviously Mkhitaryan was on fire, and Man U fans aren't very happy with Danny Rose right now.
Well, it will be a big loss with him going out, because, I mean, to my eyes, he looks like the most Man United player they've had in absolutely ages.
Yeah, I mean, Steve Bruce didn't break his nose for those defenders, did he? Like, come on.
Since Rooney was young, that's he just looks so perfectly suited to Man United, the way Man United
unstoppable to some degree. But we talked about the Titanic then. James, is Herrera to some extent the James to Paul Pogba's Rose on that little float of driftwood after the boat's gone down?
Nice.
How important is he to Man United?
He's the one who makes. I wouldn't say he's the one that makes United tick. He's not the most creative player, but he's sort of the bridge between all of it. Really, he's proper 90s Man United, isn't he? Like all over. He's the one who gets the crowd going. He's a fan favourite.
A little bit nasty as well.
Oh yeah, he's got
Spanish
for
Nicky Butt.
Yeah, he's up.
Ooh,
yeah,
nice
he's all
comparison.
Action, isn't he? He's all action. And on a huge pitch like Old Trafford, you need a centre midfielder who covers ground, but Ander Herrera. Paul Pogba does, but it's not really his role. Michael Carrick physically
he's
cannot.
50% of Carrick's running at the moment.
Cannot.
It's funny. I remember when Herrera signed for Man United, I had a friend who supports Man United saying to me that he reminded him of Paul Ince in the way that he brought the ball forward. And United haven't really had a player like
that. Paul Ince coached by Bielsa for a couple of years.
Imagine that. We don't have to. We've got Ander Herrera. United will host Crystal Palace in midweek. Alan Pardew, the man, the myth, the legend. Is he going to cause me any trouble?
He's going on another run, isn't he?
Of course he is. You can just... There's something about Palace, because you watch them and they don't play bad football, but they make really stupid mistakes.
Most defensive errors in the league this season.
Yeah, I mean, literally every other goal they concede, you're like, but why isn't there a man on the post? You know, you can see the goals going in before it's even in the box. And I think going to Man United, or playing Man United, sorry, and beating them is exactly the sort of game that Pardew would love. You know, if he's got someone like Jason Puncheon playing, he will get the boys up. You know, Dan, Delaney, they will be up for it. And yeah, I can see like a 2-1 to Palace and Mourinho just blaming
kicking
the
about
grass.
5 bottles. Yeah.
Yeah, blaming the grass.
Spurs, meanwhile, will accommodate Mike Phelan's Hull City, but will they accommodate them, if you catch my drift, Mo?
Are you feeling that part?
I think they will.
Curtis Davis is the busiest man in football. Is he going to be able to stop Harry Kane in the same way that Rojo stopped?
Basically, if Curtis Davis has his Superman underwear on underneath his thing, he'll be absolutely fine.
Sources suggest he always does.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's Spurs. The thing with Spurs is you keep thinking at some point they're just going to go on a run again where they don't concede goals, their pressing really works, and they just start scoring 1-2 goals every game. It just doesn't seem to be coming. Like, they keep keep faltering. I still think what they needed is not Eric Lamella that they signed, Roma's Eric Lamella. So an attacking midfielder that can create and score goals, actually go past people, dribble past people. They really lack that, and it's just so evident because everything's on Harry Kane. If Harry Kane is marked out of the game in any sort of way, they just don't have any goal threat.
Speaking of a midfielder that can get around the pitch, score goals, and make things happen, Dimitri Payet against Liverpool. 2-2 at Anfield against the Reds, as they call them. I believe that no player has scored more goals from free kicks in the Premier League since the start of last season than Dimitri Payet, who has 3. All the focus on Loris Karius, but what on earth's going on with Liverpool's defence at the moment, Maka?
I mean, Joel Matip missed one game and conceded 4 goals. He comes back in, everyone's a bit nervy. There's been a lot of press attention on Liverpool's back four. Jamie Carragher and Gary Neville having a go at Loris Karius, him biting back. And Karius's comeback to Gary Neville was the best comeback this season of anyone. Like, you're an expert, you were a failed manager. And then they had to go back at him again, saying, shut up and do your job. It's a bit ironic that these the pundits were doing that to him. But Karius is a bit of a disaster, saying all that. He doesn't inspire any confidence, can he? People keep trying to... The only saving grace, people keep going, look at De Gea now. When he first came in, he was dropped for Lindegaard, chopped and changed, susceptible under a high ball, bit skinny. But Karius looks, with Liverpool signed a ball-playing goalkeeper, and he looks anything but. He doesn't look any better than Mignolet, really, does he? But Klopp's backed his man now. Klopp's backed his man. He's got to give him the season, really.
I think Neville and Carragher are getting to the point where it's a bit bullying. I wouldn't mind if they were like Paul Scholes, who never came out in the media when they were players and complained when people said anything about them. But they need to appreciate, you may be ex-players who've won X amount of trophies, but now you're the media. If you don't want people to respond to what you say, then don't say it.
Yeah.
It's like some double standard that, oh, I used to play for Man United, I used to play for Liverpool. Well, no one cares. You were rude, you were arrogant. Now you're in the media, just like they used to give all the press grief, and we all know about that. So, you know, suck it up. Put your big boy pants on.
I think there is a small issue at Liverpool at the moment because they're keeping the ball so well, it's gone a bit far the other way. So every game, Liverpool turn in 65-70% possession, and the shots on target have dried right up. And this is a counter-attacking team. It's not a team built to keep possession.
It's not Klopp ball, is it?
No, it's 3 shots on target against West Ham. Scored twice, and Firmino was disastrous, and they're just flinging the ball in the box. And
strangely though, it seems like, I mean, looking at the match of the weekend, I mean, Klopp actually said this in his press conference afterwards, in that at some points they only had Matip, who was the other, was it Lovren at the back as well, and Hendo were the only, he said Hendo, that's not mine, that's Klopp's words, all 3 of those players were at the back with Karius, and everybody else was pushing forward. So even though they're not getting as many shots on target, it's almost like
there's no space if everyone's up the other end.
Yeah,
though.
So, are they attacking too quickly, Mo? Is that the issue?
I think they are. Part of me wonders if it's like a deliberate ploy by Klopp to just remain unpredictable a little bit, because I mean, there is one way to play Liverpool.
Or is that maybe he's trying to counterbalance the loss of Coutinho by trying to put numbers up there instead?
It could be, but I don't know. Klopp is big on numerical superiority in key areas, not necessarily just in attacking areas. I think the idea is maybe, I can only imagine this, what it is, because he's trying to vary the approach a little bit so it doesn't become predictable. Because obviously Liverpool got to the point where you just, okay, so just sit back, park the bus, then they won't do anything because they want to do the same thing. But now it's like, now that I think he's training them to actually be good enough with the ball to play with the ball, because a lot of teams are going to go, look at Liverpool, say, okay, they're a really good side, just park the bus and let them have the ball.
Well, that's kind of what West Ham did to some extent. I mean, you look at a defensive display by numbers, 64 clearances, 21 aerial duels, 20 blocks, 19 interceptions. I know the... I know that Winston Reid got the most defensive actions of any player in the Premier League this weekend as well. Burnley play Middlesbrough next. Is it going to be a case of the same old story, James?
I mean, West Ham have key players back now, don't they? Payet's actually in form again. Aaron Cresswell, Mikel Antonio, they're like their side, basically. They can muddle on. I mean, they'll be fine this season. They'll beat Burnley.
But that stubbornness, is that going to cause Liverpool problems against Middlesbrough, who are another side that like to set up to defend?
I mean, the timing of Coutinho's injury was like very poor for the side, but the worry every Liverpool fan's had in the back of their heads since we signed him and he started getting really good, or since Liverpool signed Mane and he started getting really good, was that he's going to the African Cup of Nations in January. So trying to work around a solution for Sadio Mane down the right has been at the back of every Liverpool fan's mind, and now we're having to compensate for Coutinho being missing as well. Adam Lallana can only run so much in the 75 minutes yeah. before he's hauled off.
Yeah, Liverpool had like a really good first 11 like in October. It was a first 11. There really wasn't much depth behind them.
I disagree. I think there is quite a bit of depth, but there's not people that can pick up that specialised role, really. There is solutions in the squad. Maybe that's what Klopp's trying to try out now.
Mm. Depth has been an issue for West Ham as well, but they've got a lot of players coming back from injury now, Natasha. In his press conference after getting absolutely tonked by Arsenal, Simon Birch said they've lost the intensity both in training and in games. After this win, 2-2 at Anfield. Sorry, I say a win. It's a win in terms of momentum. It's a draw in terms of results.
Mentality.
Yeah. A 2-2 draw at Liverpool. Is this the kind of result that can spur them on, get them back on their feet, get them playing on the front foot again?
Yeah, it's really weird to watch West Ham because you look at them and you think, okay, your position's a false position, you should be higher up. But then sometimes they're actually really bad. Mm. Like if everyone worked as hard as Mikel Antonio or Cresswell or even Randolph, who was devastated to have let the goal in, you know, that would not be a problem. I do think sometimes they believe the mental ability is as good as the physical ability. Mm. I think they need some better players. And I think some of their stars from last season don't look like they're interested, regardless of whether they're scoring goals or not.
I rarely listen to Harry Redknapp and he rarely like pulls out anything of note anymore. But he said something pretty good last week about West Ham. He said that none of their new signings are in the team, which must create a bit of a toxic dressing room atmosphere. Because the players that were there last season that have got West Ham to this stage, they're looking at these players that are coming on big wages and large fees. They're not turning up in training. They're on the bench. They're not really contributing anything. And they must be thinking, come on, lads, you're supposed to be here doing stuff for us. But West Ham didn't improve their team at all in the summer. Got so bogged down in signing a marquee player with this big stadium move. They just spent loads of money or loads of time chasing pipe dreams. End up with Simone Zaza on loan.
Who might be going off on loan somebody else.
We might as well stick me up top for West Ham.
How many seasons are they going to see Andy Carroll as their saviour?
Yeah.
I think that says a lot. You know, when they get to a point where it's not about waiting for him to come back from this week's latest injury, then you can seriously see them as a side that are moving up rather than where they are, which is...
They have been kind of unlucky, though, with injuries to Andre Ayew and Sofyan Feghouli, who were two very good signings. Of all their nonsense...
Yeah, Feghouli has not looked it so far.
No, you've got to give players time to adapt. They're both good players, Ayew and Feghouli. Yeah. But they just need time to adapt. But they're sensible signings because they complement Payet very well.
Arsenal got their hex over Stoke once again with a 3-1 win. They're purring after a bit of a sketchy November. I think in November they had the lowest amount of shots on target of any side in the league. Are they back on form, Natasha?
I don't think they're back on form, but I think they did the job that was necessary. People always like to talk about their weak middle and their lack of mentality. But as Wenger said, you know, they've gone behind six times already and they've not lost any of those games. They've either, as they did against Stoke, came back and won or drawn. I don't think it's about purring because sometimes it's not necessarily the best team that wins the league. It's the most consistent and the most capable of pulling out the results. And I think the squad is now good enough to put a serious challenge rather than it just being the first 11 and everyone panicking when players start getting injured.
Yeah, this is the thing, actually, I think with Arsenal, it was weird, the game. It wasn't... Apart from that, they conceded first, which, okay, that's not good, but essentially it was a routine win. Mm. It was like, okay, they're playing a lesser side and they just beat them. They didn't really play brilliantly, Arsenal. I'd say without Hector Bellerin was the only really exceptional player. You can maybe make a case for Theo Walcott as well.
Sanchez.
I thought he was quite quiet. He got held in check, but it was like, okay, we can beat these teams now. Beat them easily, really, at the end of the day, which is, it's sort of the thing. I mean, I know it's Stoke and Arsenal always beat Stoke at the Emirates, but it's just interesting to see this evolution of Arsenal because, like you said, yeah, they went behind and that didn't really affect their confidence. They kept going and going. And, I mean, Hector Bellerin being back is huge. I mean, when he came on the pitch, the transformation was instantaneous.
I was going to say, speaking of injured players coming back, I mean, Hector Bellerin now has registered 7 Premier League assists since the start of last season. That's more than any other defender.
It was an incredible assist. He held his width. He didn't go infield. Everyone got sucked infield. He's standing out there by himself. A lovely pass from Alexis to release him and then just brilliant curl on the pass. Walcott with an exceptional near post run. It really is the year of Theo, by the way.
You heard it here first.
I don't want that calendar.
if you get a free coffee machine.
Oh, right, yeah.
Sorry. Oh, yeah, he's going to get that now, isn't he?
Yeah, he's going to get a coffee machine because he scored 10 goals before Christmas.
What a lucky boy indeed. Arsenal will have an away trip in their next game midweek against Everton. I mean, surely, I mean, the form Everton are in, they're not looking like a good side under Koeman.
Arsenal always win at Goodison as well. They've got a good record there.
Mm. My brother's an Everton fan, and he's very not happy with Koeman. Very not happy, or unhappy, as the word was created to avoid people saying that. Yeah, he thinks he's a bit of a media darling, but there's not much substance to it. I don't think Everton bought very well in the summer, really. They bought Bolasie, who was he was kind of the only one really linking up with Lukaku.
Yeah.
But they didn't really address a guy who's good, but again, he's playing with essentially an old fella in certain mids. Whoever's running for him.
They bought two good players and then nothing
actually
else.
Williams
really.
Just hoofing the hell
it's
out of
actually,
it.
Well,
I was going to say, Everton actually made the most long balls of any side in the Premier League.
They are a long ball
season.
Team now. They were on the Southampton, were really, but it was functional. It was down the flanks. But I mean, if you don't have Bolasie, don't have Bolasie,
amazing haircut.
Clearances to the flanks don't make much sense. And Ross Barkley, like, he's having the sort of slump that he only has from March, really, usually. He's having it now. So I think Ross Barkley's Everton future is really up for grabs, to be honest.
I think he needs to leave. I think he's clearly stuck in a rut there. He needs to go somewhere where he'll be challenged and coached by, frankly, a better coach.
He's a player without he's really a player without a clearly defined position.
Has no direction whatsoever. I think
he really has become the new Rooney, hasn't he?
Yeah. He's one of three players, which would be Sturridge and Wilshere, and Barkley, that would be three, who really need to consider their futures come January or the summer, because right now they're just stagnating or they could be dropping lower down.
Well, kind of moving to the South Coast on that point, Stoke going to host Southampton, who are just down the coastline from where Wilshere currently is at Bournemouth. That's a tenuous link. Southampton or Stoke, who do you reckon are going to take that one, Natasha?
I don't know, because they're both the kind of teams where one individual could produce a piece of magic, but you kind of don't know which version of them's going to turn up. Obviously, Charlie Austin's out.
We've got Bufal doing a bit of a Shaqiri-esque thing, aren't they?
Yeah, he seems really nice. He thanked all the medical staff and the staff, which I thought was really cool after his goal. But yeah, you don't know which Stoke are going to turn up.
But you do know which Chelsea are going to turn up.
The good Chelsea.
The good Chelsea, almost every game at the moment.
The Conte Chelsea.
The Conte Chelsea. 9 games, 9 wins, 23 goals scored, 2 conceded.
One of which was an own goal.
So really, they've only really conceded one goal. They haven't, but you know. West Brom parked the bus, and Conte needed to do about 4 tactical changes in the end to get the result he needed. But it was a fantastic bit of work by Diego Costa to get the goal, wasn't it, James?
Yeah, Diego Costa hasn't picked up a booking in that 9 match winning run.
He's on 4 yellow cards, but hasn't been booked in September. If he gets one more, he's out, and he's somehow walking the tightrope.
Which shows you that all the theatrics are just completely on purpose. But Conte has also obviously got into him, just been like, "You're really good. You're making the team play better. Please stop doing that stuff."
I was actually at Stamford Bridge at the weekend, and just in the press conference, someone asked him about this, Conte, and he got this hilarious smile on his face, just going, "It's incredible. I don't understand. He's on 4 cards, but he's not another one. What is going on?"
He's the first season Costa. He's the Atletico Madrid Costa. He's that top 10 striker in the world Costa, rather than that Mardy guy who's wandering around pitches for months on end,
stamping on people's feet.
He's a world-class striker in this form, and Eden Hazard's a world-class player. So they have two of the probably, I don't know, there's not many world-class players in the Premier League, but they're two of them. But Conte's a very clever coach, isn't he? He's probably the most adaptable coach in the league. I think because he's had to play with similar players. He's always managed a team with expectation on it. I think it shows. He's never had that early job in his career. We didn't really have much to do. I mean, even when he took over at Juve, he was in Serie B and he was expected to win promotion comfortably, and he did. And then he made Juve the force in Italy again, which is no small matter given how much money they had.
Yeah.
And then with Italy, Italy are a tournament team, so he's expected to do stuff in tournaments.
And everyone's favourite coach at Euro 2016, pretty much, wasn't
it? Yeah, I mean, you can tell he's been a serious coach his entire coaching career already.
But speaking of serious and clever coaches, Tony Pulis, for a large part of the game, looked like the man who might finally gum up the workings of Chelsea's 3-4-3.
Yeah.
But as we saw, Mo, it doesn't matter. You put 8 players back, that caused them problems with their build-up play, so Conte changed to a 4-2-4, then a 4-3 2-1, and then finally, you know, sort of 5-4-1 to see out the game at the end. But I mean, not many other teams are going to be able to do that because they're not going to commit that amount of defensive players backwards. I mean, City aren't going to do that. Arsenal aren't going to do that.
It's not just about attacking numbers as well.
It's not, but they're going to be playing Sunderland next in the league. If there's one team to take the Tony Pulis template, Jurgen Klopp called the most defensive side he's ever faced. Are Sunderland going to stick to the same plan?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's David Moyes. Come on. It won't be as adventurous as Pulis's formation.
Gilabogi's revenge?
It'll be 4-4.
It might. John the Carey novel right there, isn't it?
hey, Papi's got a brand new bag.
Oh! Like, and that bag is David Moyes' face? No, I don't know.
It's going to be two banks of four.
It's kind of a bit Texas Chainsaw Massacre there.
It's going to be two banks of four with one player either behind or ahead of the midfield and then Jermaine Defoe up front. They're going to park it. They're going to say, go on then, hit us with your best shot. And they're going to cling on to dear life. I don't think it will be enough. I think Chelsea are in a groove right now. And because Conte gets whole weeks to train with his players, they're absorbing his information much faster than, like, Pep Guardiola, for example. They will not absorb his philosophy until maybe the end of the season because he doesn't get enough training days with them. Conte gets all week to train with these guys, and it's showing. They're really understanding what he's about, what he wants them to do. They really get the formation. They get what they've got to do.
So City are poor, but not porous.
Yeah.
Is that the issue? They need to saturate themselves with the Pep way.
Exactly. I mean, well, they need more time. They need time that doesn't exist, essentially. Which Chelsea,
this sounds very Guardiola.
It's very Doctor Strange.
False
really.
Time. They need false time.
I think Chelsea are going to win.
Bernard's watch. That's what they need.
I think Bernardo's watch. That's the football version.
Fernando's watch.
I think Chelsea are going to win. I think they're going to win the league. I think they've got the bonus of not being in Europe, and they've got a system, and they've got a great coach, and they've got two world class players who will lift the team up when they're not performing, like Costa did. Sunday.
In their own way, Swansea have kind of got one world-class player, not really world-class, but he's definitely better than the rest, is Gylfie Sigurdsson. Is he going to be... They're not quite out of the mire. They're nowhere near out of the mire, really, but they are trying their best to get out of this relegation scrap. They're going to be going away to West Brom in their next game. West Brom looked very good against Chelsea. They might have lost, and they might have put a lot of players at the back. But has Bob Bradley got any hope against Tony Pulis? I mean, he is almost the embodiment of what people are taking the mickey out of Bob Bradley for not being, isn't Tony Pulis?
Yeah, I think the thing is with Swansea, you know, you see a lot of teams kind of down tools even this early in the season. They're clearly playing for their manager. Like you say,
Swans are not on strike.
Oh, they are not. I mean, they're not the greatest players. They don't have the best squad. And there's some people, you know, they could do with bringing in some steel in January. But at least they're giving it a go. Mm. You know what? If you get relegated, at least try not to get relegated. Don't just think, oh, okay, we're getting relegated.
It always helps.
Yeah, it does. It does help. And let's be honest, they're not too good to go down. So they really have to give it a go, which they are.
One side that did look too good to go down at the weekend was Leicester City. Okay, they're fruited around the 16, but they've been very poor in the league. Ranieri's even spoke about his fear of relegation. But they absolutely tore Man City to shreds. 4-2 against Pep Guardiola. I mean, it doesn't make him a bald fraud, as Man United fans like to make out, but it raises some serious questions, Mo.
I mean, yeah, we said already, this guy didn't sign fullbacks, and he's resorted to playing Kolarov and Sanya in the back three.
Kolarov
and...
just plays where he wants as well.
I mean, this is what happened.
Does Kolarov know where he is?
Maybe in the world, but not on the pitch.
Geographically, yes, tactically, no.
I mean, you look at just what happened at the weekend, and essentially, I mean, okay, the Andy King goal was very nice, broken from set piece, but essentially, three of the four goals, they looked at Alexander Kolarov, said, right, he's rubbish, let's target him, and Jamie Vardy just ran at him all night long, and all three of the goals
all night long. We've got some great hits on there tonight.
three of the goals just came from targeting that area. Poor John Stones. I mean, he's made mistakes. He makes mistakes himself. But the guy is 22 years old, trying to cover for his 29-year-old left back turned centre back. You know, and it's too much work for the guy, and he's making mistakes. He reminds me of Rio Ferdinand 2005 when he was covering for Silvestre, making all the mistakes, and was like, well, why do you expect he's making mistakes? He's trying to cover for this idiot. So it's the same thing. It's just. Stones has overworked. Kolarov is not good enough to play centre back. And just Leicester just brilliantly lessed it right up.
Well, are Watford possibly the worst possible team City could play next in the Premier League? Because they are the most feisty, intense, combative side in the league. You've got Troy Deeney, who's going to be winning all the individual battles in the air. You've got Pereira with the touch of class. You've got Okaka. Where did he come from with that amazing backheel goal at the weekend?
What a goal.
They lead the way for fouls in the Premier League this season. Are Watford going to do one over Guardiola as well, James?
I mean, it sounds like a bit of a cliche, but the Premier League is a different beast in terms of league standards to anything else in Europe, because... I'm going to give you another. There aren't any easy games, but like
anyone can beat anyone.
Anyone can beat anyone, and there's 90 minutes, game of 2 hours, and all that stuff. But like Pep Guardiola can expect to go, if he loses one game at Bayern or Barcelona, he can expect to have a fairly easy home game or a fairly easy task the next one. You don't really get that in the league, and if you want rotten runs, just carry on and carry on. It's the first time in Pep's managerial career in back-to-back league games if teams have conceded 3+ goals. Which is, it shows you he's getting to grips with the difficulties of the Premier League. And like Mo said, he's not got the time really to coach into him what he wants. So you're getting Pep light. You're getting 55.
We're not getting Pepsi Max. That's the problem.
You definitely are. You're getting like 60% Pep when they're playing well. And then you're getting like 30% Pep City when they're not playing well or they've got a lot of fixtures on. So they're running on empty at the moment in terms of... They look very fatigued as well at the moment, City.
I'm a big fan of John Stones, but I think Troy Deeney is going to bully the hell out of him.
Stones isn't
weekend.
Fantastic in the air either.
They need Nico Otamendi. I mean, they missed him actually a lot again.
I just think mentality-wise, Troy Deeney's just got that confidence he's going to grasp.
Speaking of mentality and confidence, Jamie Vardy is back by the looks of it. The Champions League is now over. Leicester have secured their passage through. He scored a hat-trick against City. I mean, I don't think he's... When was the last time he scored in the league? It's been a while, hasn't it? Are Leicester City back? They're going to have Bournemouth away in midweek. Are they going to do a number on Eddie Howe's team as well, Natasha?
Are they back to where? Are they back to winning the league again? Because that's not going to happen.
I'm not saying they're going to win the league, but are they back in terms of a side that can really cause trouble?
They're back in terms of not getting relegated, possibly, but they still look a bit complacent, a bit lethargic, and, you know... They definitely seem like a team now that will be like, well, as long as we're not in the relegation zone, then it's all right. Well, it's not really. You should be giving it a bit more than that.
Definitely, definitely. It has been a disappointing title defence from them. But what hasn't been disappointing for everyone in the pod is our players of the weekend.
Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh. Mo, who has been your player of the weekend?
Lionel Messi.
It's
kind of boring, but you know, if you watched him play, you know, 5 of 8 take-ons, you know, just exceptional passing as always. His passing, the movement in the build-up for the first goal for Luis Suarez's opening goal against Osasuna is a really, really nice pass, bisecting about 5 different players. And the third goal, you know, you have to see it to believe it. He runs past like 6 guys, sits down 3 of them, feints the goalkeeper with a chip, and just distinct. It's a beautiful goal. It's a wonderful goal.
James, your player of the weekend.
I'm going to go with Sergio Ramos, just because I love a bit of narrative. And Real Madrid club record, 35 consecutive games unbeaten. I mean, they were going to be unbeaten anyway. They were drawing, but Sergio Ramos for the second game in a row pops up with an injury time winner, and it's his 76th goal for club and country in his career. He's a defender.
What a man.
It's like Messi's the embodiment of Barcelona, Ramos is the embodiment of Real Madrid to some extent.
Yeah.
Natasha, your player of the weekend.
Mikel Antonio, because he is just the ultimate utility player. He must have played every position bar goalkeeper at the weekend against Liverpool. And if you ever wanted an example in your team when you're fighting for your life, then he's the guy to go to.
Beautiful.
Although his celebration was a bit poor. We'll discuss that another day.
Well, those are our players of the weekend. Player of the year, we are reliably informed, is going to be Cristiano Ronaldo, the Ballon d'Or winner for 2016. His 4th Ballon d'Or. Only Messi has won more. I mean, he's surely the greatest ever, most complete goal scorer the game's ever seen.
We're alive for Puskas, but you look at the numbers. He's putting up Puskas / Eusebio numbers. So... and he's doing it in the modern era with the modern physical demands. You have to argue.
He might be a streamlined goal threat these days, getting a lot of his flair, but he still does so much more than just score goals as well. I mean, he might be less involved in games these days, but he's posted these numbers for years while being a winger a lot of the time.
He's not really been a winger for a while, but
he hasn't just scored all these goals this year. He's got a long record.
I think you need to look at him as a striker, and I think as a striker, I think he's top three all time, top two maybe all time. He's phenomenal as a goal scoring machine. There's no one that does what he's done. Was it 50 consecutive goals for five seasons, six seasons? Mm. 60 consecutive goals in per calendar year, the last three. It's ridiculous, the amount of numbers. No one scores goals in his numbers. He is slowing down now. You can see it. He's only got 12 and 17 for Real Madrid this season, and bar the hat-trick against the...
Only 12 and 17. This is how crazy his previous record.
Well, this is what I'm saying, isn't it? I mean, 12 and 17 is a really good record, but he only has that. And bar the Atletico Madrid hat-trick, which was really impressive, it's basically been against lower quality teams. He's not as impactful as he used to be, but he still is a great goal scorer. And of course, he's going to win the Ballon d'Or because of the Euros and the Champions League, even though he was carried to both by his teammates.
Well, James, in that hat-trick against Atletico, we saw him play up front as a proper centre-forward with Isco behind him. Is that now the future for him at Real Madrid and with Portugal?
Well, he did it at Man United, but when United won the Champions League, is it 08-09, the year they won it? No, 07-08, wasn't it?
Yes.
Beat Chelsea.
Yes, yeah.
He played a lot of United's best European performances, particularly away from home, were with Rooney out wide on the left, Ronaldo through the middle. So he's always had this in his locker. He's just a supreme one-on-one finisher. Does he ever get through, like Mkhitaryan at the weekend, when he got through one-on-one with Courtois, you just knew he was going to score.
Never in doubt, is it?
Yeah,
never
but like doubt. With Cristiano Ronaldo, it's just, that's 1-0.
Is there any other player you would choose? If you had to pick one player to score a goal to save your life, is there anybody else you'd choose above Cristiano Ronaldo? From any distance, any angle, anywhere?
Messi.
Over Ronaldo
He is statistically a better finisher than
Cristiano
Ronaldo.
I'm basing it on, I've seen both of them live, and Messi was more amazing to me live. But then that was obviously towards the end of Ronaldo's Man United career.
The poor bloke just won his fourth Ballon d'Or. I was really hoping we wouldn't get into this debate, but damn, we've done it. We've turned it into Messi versus Ronaldo.
The thing
again.
Is, Ronaldo has the thing over Messi now, which Messi hasn't had yet, is the whole, it is a like done to death debate, but the whole thing that's held it up was the international honours, wasn't it? And Messi's, bless him, he's trying to win a Copa America. He's trying to win a World Cup, and he's let down to some extent by his teammates.
And
Portugal did win the Euros with Ronaldo off the pitch.
Yeah, but I mean, imagine having Higuain and Aguero and Di Maria as your teammates, and seeing Ronaldo getting a bigger assist and help from his teammate Eder than you get from yours.
Seriously, we cannot dwell on Messi. Ronaldo's just won the Ballon d'Or.
He does deserve it.
It's true. It's my fault as the interviewer, not the interviewee. But anyway, that is all we've got time for today. Cristiano Ronaldo is the Ballon d'Or winner, the best player in the world for 2016, according to France Football. And we've been the Squawker Talker. Mo, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Greg.
No problem. James, thank you once again. Thank you for your long-awaited return.
Oh, no worries. Hopefully not so long next time.
No, definitely not. Natasha, it's great to have you on again.
Good to be on. Thank you.
No problem at all. We've got another wonderful Rory Briggs-led one-on-one podcast this week on Wednesday, dropping then with Dominic Bliss, the man behind The Inside Left and the author of the biography of Erbstein, the man who led Gran Torino to the very top and then was tragically killed in the Supercar disaster. A fantastic podcast you should definitely check out on Wednesday. I, Greg Johnson, that's a bit spotter because I'm not going to say it again, are back on Thursday with the next Squawker Talker podcast where we're going to be rounding up the midweek action from across the Premier League. Please do join us then and see you again soon.